Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me today is my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Dr. Polacek is a nationally recognized expert spokesperson on mental health and substance use disorder issues. He utilizes his experience and expertise to lead the Betty Ford Center's outpatient services as its director.
Alan is an international detective and president of West Shield Adolescent Services, a known leader in crisis intervention and therapeutic transportation. Now, if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions, and so much more.
Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
It's that time of year again when graduation rewards college students' years of hard work with a degree that will set them on a path for future success.
This time also marks a transition from campus to the unfamiliar workplace for many of them, and the stress about whether they'll find a job, if they'll be fulfilling, whether they can earn enough money to pay off their student loans, and whether they'll fail or disappoint their families.
Every year, these college graduates are faced with questions such as, what interests you, what do you want to do with your career, and what qualities and skills do you have when planning their next steps? Well, to answer these questions and so much more, today our guest is Chris Palmer.
Now, Chris is a professor, a speaker, an author, and a wildlife film producer who has spearheaded the production of more than 300 hours of original programming for primetime television and the giant screen IMAX industry.
Chris founded the Center for Environmental Filmmaking at American University's School of Communications in 2005, a year after joining AU's full-time faculty as a distinguished film producer in residence.
Chris regularly gives speeches and workshops on a variety of topics, including how to radically improve one's success and productivity, how to give effective presentations, how to network effectively, how to raise money, and how to motivate engaged students.
His first two books were Shooting in the Wild and Confessions of a Wildlife Filmmaker, and here to talk about his newest book, Now What, Grad? Your Path to Success After College. Chris, welcome to Answers with the Family, for the family.
Alan, thank you so much for a nice introduction. You are wonderful to have me on. I'm delighted to be with you and Matt this afternoon.
Well, it is great to have you, and Matt and I were talking as we were waiting in the green room. We were talking about how timely this is. I have a freshman who is coming home in a couple of days from his first year at the University of Hawaii, and many other parents are at home knowing that their, in some cases, seniors are going to be coming home and looking at them saying, I got the degree, now what? So, again, we thank you for coming on, and especially at this time.
Well, it's my pleasure. It is a worrying time, Alan. It's scary for these kids. You know, they've been in a safe environment. They've been told what to do, turn up for 4 o'clock on Mondays for a class on sociology, Friday 2 o'clock for something else. And they've been focusing on their degrees, on their majors, and the social lives and so on. Suddenly, they're out of that and they're in the real world. They've got to find a job, do interviews, even find interviews. It is very tough, and they've got a lot of debt, as you said. So it's a scary time. I've written my book, Now What, Grad, to help them.
Now, is that who you had in mind? More those seniors, that you believed would benefit the most from the book?
Well, the book is written for anybody coming out of college with a bachelor's or a master's degree or a PhD, anybody who's coming into the real world and needs and needs to thrive in the real world. But frankly, the book, as you indicated before, Alan, the book is useful to anybody at any age going through any kind of transition or rethinking what they're doing or just having second thoughts about what, you know, the relationship they're in or the job they're in. So it's a useful self-help book for anybody at any time of their lives.
And is it specific? So, like, will a reader be able to identify a chapter that really applies just to them?
Absolutely. There are two ways to read the book. One is to read it from page one through the end. The other way to read it is to look down the chapter headings and see what grabs your attention. There are chapters on finding a job, on managing stress, on finding mentors, on managing time management, on being a lifelong learner, on being resilient and ethical, how to give a speech, how to run a meeting, how to absorb feedback and criticism without crumbling. All these, dozens of these different subjects. These are topics, Alan, that we professors often don't teach our students at universities and colleges. And that's one reason why I wrote the book, because we don't do enough of that. We're very focused on whatever the subject is, engineering or German or filmmaking or whatever, psychology. You know, we teach this content. We're not very good at teaching life skills, which are critical if people are going to succeed.
As you're speaking, I think of the, quote, failure to launch, 20 to 30-year-olds. It seems like this book would be very applicable to them, too.
Absolutely. It's about anybody who wants to launch their career and to be successful. And I think, and that when I say success, Alan, I'm not talking about just success in the job. You know, what's important is to be successful in life in all of the areas of your life: emotional, spiritual, mental, financial, physical, and in your career. So yes, you do want to have success in your career. You want to have a job that you find fulfilling and helps you pay your way in the world. But it's also important to be successful in your relationships, in your family, in other areas as well. So success is far more than simply being successful in your career.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I know that when you first came on, one of the things that you mentioned was sort of all of the stresses and the things in which these young people are going through there when they're in their senior year and they've gone through, you know, all of the things that you have to do to go through finals and graduation and stuff. Do you feel that it's a good idea for them to maybe take a break, maybe travel for a couple months? Is it better for them to take that time and sort of rejuvenate or to get right out there and start looking for that job?
Well, you can make arguments for both. What I favor is actually sort of a middle ground. In other words, before you leave for two months of travel, which might be a good idea, especially if you're going to volunteer or do something useful, not just laze around. But if you're, find fancy, beaches and so on. But if you're actually going to do something useful and learn something, then travel, I think, is great. But before you go, make some calls, do some interviews, at least. So when you come back, you're not at the bottom of the ladder. At least you're halfway up the ladder. You got some letters out there. You got some contacts. So I think great to travel. And answering your question more broadly, Alan, I think doing a gap year before going to college is also an excellent idea. So I know I think traveling is good, especially volunteering. Things like the Peace Corps. There are lots of things to do besides studying, which are very, very useful. But if you do eventually need to find a job, then don't just delay all those things that lead to a job. In other words, look into corporations and organizations, nonprofits. See, try and find out what you really do care about. Write a personal mission statement.
And when we're looking at what you want to do, does the book actually help with specifics as far as employment and seeking to get an actual job?
It really does. I mean, the book has a whole chapter, for example, on how to do well in an interview. It's amazing to me how many people don't know how to do well in an interview. You want to come in, you want to stand up straight, you want to dress appropriately, you want to be able to smile. put your hand out, shake hands, and enter into a nice, easy, good-natured conversation. Don't forget, employers want to hire people who they like, who they think will fit in with the team. So you want to be come across as a likable, you know, good, honest, ethical person. So yeah, there are things that there are the chapters in the book which deal with that and how to go about looking for a job. I mean that in itself is a job, looking for a job, and there are skills to it, you know. And if you're looking for a job now, you don't want to get up and, you know, late in the morning and watch television. No, don't do anything like that. You know, be working by 9 o'clock and have your day planned out between 9 and 5 and divide it into set times when you're looking, when you're Googling companies, learning more about them, when you are calling people to follow up on leads, when you're going out to have lunch with a friend to network. In other words, you know, be systematic and intentional about your efforts.
Yeah, you know, what was funny, as I was listening to you, I was remembering that in our introduction, everybody now knows that you've put out over 300 hours of television, and yet one of the things that you're telling people is don't start just sitting around and watching television. Get out there and find a job. Get out there and learn the things that you need to do and how to get a good job. I love that.
It is a paradox or an irony that I'm in the filmmaking business. I make films for a living about wildlife, and yet they don't watch much television. People who watch a lot of television are destined to fail, and you want to get away from that. You want to be very selective in the shows you watch, highly selective, and only watch shows that advance you professionally, or give you great sort of pleasure in a real sense, not just a fleeting something which is really substantive. And so you successful people don't watch much television.
Yeah, and I like that, because again, what you're saying is that, you know, there are good things you can get from television, just like the internet. You know, you can gain incredible amounts of wonderful education from being able to go on the internet or being able to watch it on television. You're just saying, be selective. Get the things that are out there that are good for you, and not things that just may, you know, numb your brain.
Absolutely, Alan. You put that very well. Be highly selective. There is so much garbage on television. There is so much garbage on the internet. You want to avoid it. You want to surround yourself with good, healthy thoughts, because if you don't, it'll drag you down. And so, yes, very important to be highly selective. Only watch shows that are going to help to advance your career.
It seems like higher education also is a route a lot of people are going. And so if an individual has decided to go to grad school, is this a book that would still be applicable?
Very, very much so. Absolutely. It's full of ideas on how to be successful as a graduate student, and, you know, things like how to be a lifelong learner, how to be skilled at time management, how to give a speech, how to run a meeting. All these are things. And many other skills. These are skills that you need as a grad student. And even when you start as a grad student, you are thinking of the future. What am I going to do after I leave here? What am I going to work at? How am I going to earn a living? So even if you're beginning a PhD or beginning a master's program, you want to be thinking out 5-10 years. And one thing, Alan, that I recommend in my book strongly is to write a personal mission statement. Write a little essay on, in inspirational terms, on what it is that you really care about and want to do with your life. What is it you want your life to be about, to stand for? What deeply matters to you? Putting this in writing can be enormously helpful, even transformative for people.
Chris, listening to you, two kind of themes come up for me, and one sounds like preparation, and the second is really communication skills.
Yes, yeah. It's funny how those two things are so important, and it's also an irony how little of our time we spend on them. We take it for granted we can communicate clear. We take it for granted that we'll be prepared. But no, don't take those things for granted. If you have something coming up, prepare for it. Preparation and anticipating issues and being prepared to handle it is one of the key if you look at a successful person, this is the one thing they do. They look ahead, anticipate problems, prepare for them. And the other thing they do is they don't take it for granted that they are going to communicate clearly. No, they prepare. If they think they might be asked to give an extreme extemporaneous speech, an ad-lib speech, they will prepare for it. Churchill said the best speeches he ever gave, the best ad-lib speeches he ever gave, were ones he carefully prepared.
That's a great point. And, Chris, I think Matt brings up a great point about communication. But then the question is, at what point is the best time for these young people to really start thinking about this? Is it at a time in which they are younger? It is once they're in high school, once they are in college? And really, is the book one they should start reading once they're in college or at the moment in which they graduate?
Well, they should start reading the book when they get into college, because it's all about the skills they need to have to succeed in college and after college. But in terms of communication, hopefully it's something that parents will help them with early on, because the sooner, it's very well known that kids which are surrounded by lots of books have parents who are lucky enough to surround them with books, who have meals where they talk about things. These students do the best. So communication is something very important. Being able to articulate a question, being able to make a request. These are sort of linguistic acts which take practice, and the more you practice, the better you get at them. So I think and the other thing you to do, I think, is to list off, look around you and find people who you observe communicate well. They communicate clearly. They help people feel at ease. They're persuasive. They're cogent. They talk lucidly. Find people like that and spend time with them and learn from them. So that's one of the secrets of success, I think, is to look for mentors and other people who you admire, and then get to know them, spend time with them, learn from them.
And we've got a lot of wonderful parent listeners, and as you're talking, I'm thinking this book actually would help them, too, to have them refocus on areas that are going to be better for their young kids going out in the world.
You know, that is such a good point, Alan. A lot of parents nowadays need help in their parenting. There's a new book out called The Collapse of Parenting by Leonard Sachs, which I highly recommend. And he talks about how so many parents nowadays are failing in their parenting duties. They're no longer exerting parental authority, but are letting their kids be influenced by their peers too much. Mm-hmm. Of course, the social media is exacerbating that problem. So I think it's a book that parents can read and learn from and see the sorts of skills that their kids want to have. I mean, one of the duties of a parent is to help their children get to a point where they can thrive in the real world without parental support. And so by teaching them how to talk well, how to greet new people, how to behave professionally, by setting good example in those areas too, parents can help their kids.
Well, I'll tell you, I couldn't agree more. That's one of the things that we talk about quite a bit on this show is parents making sure that they understand that their job as a parent is to help their child, help to educate them, and not necessarily to be their best friend. And one comment I made not too long ago to a parent when they kept saying, but you don't understand, you know, it's important that they know that I'm their friend. And I said, excuse me, I said, but your child doesn't need a 45-year-old best friend. They need a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Alan, I so strongly agree with you on that. Parents who think they've got to be their kids' best friends are making a huge mistake. Your responsibility is to be a parent, and exert authority and to exert parental authority and to be a guide and a coach for your kids, not to be their best friend. That's the worst thing you can be. And parents who spoil their kids and give them what they want and have no limits and allow their kids to have a television in their bedroom and allow them to take their iPhone to bed with them and so wrong. Please don't do that.
You know, I I noticed in the book there's a lot of firsthand accounts of recent graduates that you included. Do you mind sharing a couple of the experiences and successes?
Yes, absolutely. The book, as you pointed out, Alan, is full of anecdotes from students, and they're very, very fascinating. One of them is of a young woman who was lost, adrift, confused, didn't know what she wanted to do, was very anxious and worried. And then she, on my advice, she wrote spent several months doing it, a personal mission statement. I helped her with it, and we went it back and forth. And in this personal mission statement, she articulated what she cared about deeply, what really mattered to her family, her relationships, certain issues in her life, and so on. And by writing these out in language which was very exciting and inspirational, in effect, writing the story of her life, she found transformative. She found over time this helped her focus. It gave her, it was like her own constitution. It gave her a sense of where she wanted to go. When she wasn't sure, she could reread it and get re-fired up with a vision she'd created for the life she wanted to lead. So that's just one story in the book.
You know, similar to that, when you were discussing the mission statement earlier, I'm thinking even my own personal life at, you know, basically 40 years old, it would still be really valuable to even reconsider writing a mission statement and kind of refocusing.
Oh, Alan, I so agree with that. I am 68, and I constantly am revising mine. I've had mine for about 40, 50 years, but it's constantly changing. It's never fixed in concrete, because we're always changing. We're always evolving. We're always being made as we go along. Every day we're remaking ourselves and rethinking what our life's about. So having a personal mission statement which you constantly revise and change and tweak and add to, very, 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 very important. And I still do that now. At 68, I'm constantly revising and tweaking. Of course, your life changes too. I've recently become a grandfather, so that's become a whole new role for me, which I didn't have when I was younger. So, yes, so life changes, and you can adapt your personal mission statement to the circumstances which you find yourself in. So very, very important, yes. So I agree with you. Very important to do it.
Now, for those people that have already gone out there and gotten a job, and I know that as I was reviewing the book and I was talking to a few people at the gym and saying, you know, hey, you know, this is a great book, because they come up and they ask me, okay, so what's the show going to be on this week? And I started talking to them, and one of them had said, okay, well, that's fine, but what about after I find a job? You know, and I've already got a job, but I'm not really all that happy in it. You know, will the book help in that?
And it absolutely will. It absolutely will, because here's the key with that is you want to. And by the way, that's a very common situation. In fact, I dare say most people have that. So, you know, you start off low down at the beginning of your career. You're not going to get what you want, and that's, in fact, one of the things that parents can do is to tell their kids you're not going to start off at the vice president level, holding meetings and you know, running everything. No, it doesn't work that way. You got to start at the bottom and work your way up. And so those earlier jobs aren't always going to be satisfying. You'll be doing some boring, menial, mundane things, which may disappoint you. But still, here's the secret. You do them anyway. You grit your teeth, you smile, and you do your darndest to work hard and to do an excellent job, even if the job is dull and routine. You do it to the best of your ability, and therefore you get a great review, great letter of recommendation from your boss. Therefore, when you do apply for a new job, you can move up the ladder. So I would say to people, even if for a job you're not completely happy, throw yourself into it, do your best, but also keep a lookout for other jobs so you can move on at the appropriate time. But it's the worst thing to do if you're in a job that you're not completely happy at is to act whiny and unhappy, and because no one likes that. You're going to get fired. If you do that, you're going to get fired. So you want to work hard, do the best you can, and look around for a new job.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And to quote my father, I remember my father when he was talking to me about how you establish you know, what your work ethic is. And he said, I don't care if you're digging ditches. Be the best ditch digger you can possibly be, and make sure that everybody else knows that you are giving your all. And as long as you do that, that's when people will look at you and say, wait a minute, maybe we need to put them in a higher position, or maybe we need to have them do something else. So I agree.
That's wonderful. You've got a great dad. You're a lucky guy. My next book is going to be on what fathers can do to help their kids do better in life. And it sounds like you've got a great dad, and he's quite right about that. Yeah, however dull and routine and mundane the job, do the best possible job you can on it.
Well, we're going to take a break right now, but I want to plant a seed with you personally, and maybe I should have done this off the air. Make sure that we talk about your next book as well, because I've kept a list of things that from friends that are things that our dad told us that stayed with us. So I would love to share that with you. So, but for everybody out there, please stay with us. As you can tell, we've got a lot of energy going. We've got a lot of good information out there. The book is called Now What Grad? Your Path to Success After College. And if you want to follow along, so during the break, go to www.chrispalmeronline.com. Go to his site, open up another window. You can follow along with us. Now, obviously, if you're driving out there, don't try this. Just stay with us. We'll be back in 1 minute. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest is Chris Palmer, and the book is Now What Grad? Your Path to Success After College.
Chris, this is Matt here, and we're so thankful to have listener questions. And one has just come up, and it says, my son received his architectural engineering degree last year and has been unable to secure work. All of the companies he has applied said they're seeking people with more experience. He's also tried to secure internships, but they want more hours than he can afford to give with a new baby on the way, living and having school loan expenses. He's been feeling hopeless lately. I'm buying your book for him in hopes it might encourage him. Can you speak to the issue of young people who can't find positions in the field they work so hard to get a degree in?
This is thank you, Matt, and thank you. I thank the person who gave you that, sent you that question. This is such a tragedy, such a tragic situation. But there are things you can do. I think one is you could ask people for informational interviews. In other words, go to an organization, a website for an organization that you'd like to work for. In his case, an architectural firm, and look at the look at who works there, identify them, write to them and say, I've read about you on your website. The work you're doing is very interesting to me. I've got this background, and I'd love to have an informational interview with you just to learn more about what you do and to get some career advice from you. And it's usually older people enjoy giving younger people help, so the chances are good that person will write back and say, sure, you know, drop by next Thursday at 11 o'clock and we'll spend 10 minutes together, and that 10 minutes will turn into, with any luck, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Your son would form a good rapport with him, and then he begins to broaden out his network of people. He'll ask that person for names of two other people who he could talk to get more advice, And so this is one thing you can do. Another thing I'd suggest is to write out a personal mission statement, as we've discussed already with Alan and Matt. And now the other thing I think is to reach out to peers who are also in the same situation. You know, your son won't be the only person suffering in this way. There'll be lots of other people. I mean, finding a job nowadays is not easy. So look for listservs or groups of people who are meeting to discuss this, so you can get some support from other people. But it is a terrible situation. It's not surprising that he's despondent and dispirited and wondering. He's made this huge investment for years in school, and now he can't even find a job. It is a most upsetting situation, and a baby on the way. I'm so sympathetic, but I think the secret, I think, is to keep taking initiative, reach out to people for help, for informational interviews, for advice, for counseling, and hang in there and don't give up.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about now, I mean, kind of leads us right into networking. And I know in chapter 24, you talk about, you know, about building relationships through networking. Share some of the tips or the things that people out there can take and go, okay, now these are some great ways to be able to go into networking and maybe not be as nervous about it.
Yeah, it is terrifying to go into a room we don't know anybody, and so the secret is to go in and look around the room. You want to act bold. You'll be nervous. Your heart will be banging away in your thumping inside your chest with apprehension and nervousness, but to put on a bit of an act, act confident, and try and catch someone's eye, and if there's someone by themselves, walk up to them and say, you know, I don't know anybody here. Do you know anybody here? And just see if you can enter into a nice, easy conversation with somebody. Or if there are two or three people standing here, see if you can catch the eye of somebody and walk in, put your hand out, smile, and say, look, I don't know anybody here. May I say hello to you guys, please? And see if you can begin to get some traction in the group. It's not easy at all. The secret is to ask open-ended questions, which, you know, there's questions which are not just yes or no, answered with a yes or no, but ask open-ended questions which will lead people to talk more about themselves. People love to talk about themselves, so mm-hmm. If you can go up to somebody you don't know and say, Do you work in this industry? Oh, what do you do? Oh, that's interesting. What do you do there at XYZ? And get them talking, that's a good way. That's a good thing to help. The best networkers are those who really care about other people. This networking is a kind of a window into your soul. If you're good at networking, the more authentic and genuine and sincere you are, if you have a genuine liking for other people, and you can show this through your voice, your eyes, your body, your handshake, and so on, then you will do well. If you really care about other people and not just you're focused on yourself, you're going to do better as a networker. And so that leads me to make one final point. Think of things that you can do to help people. I mean, as you talk to people, think of things you can, can I help you with that? You know, I know about that topic. Can I give you some help with that? They've got a speech coming. Can I drop something for you? And look for ways you can actually help other people. So you're going to a networking event to get help yourself, but the secret is to find ways to help other people.
It's brilliant and great advice. And what I hear coming from you also is the face-to-face seems to be a lot more effective than sending emails or, you know, calling.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. There's nothing can substitute for a face-to-face meeting where you can look at the person in the eye and smile and develop a warm rapport with them. I mean, this is critical to success. You know, it's not just that relationships are important. It's that they are absolutely vital. I mean, in other words, everything is around relationships in the world. Everything. And so building rapport with people, building trust, and then being a person where you who keeps their word, who is trustworthy, who keeps promises, who does what they're going to say, when you promise to deliver a report by X, you will do it by X. Being that kind of person who's so honorable, they always keep their word. This is a critical way to get to succeed in the world. Be a person that other people yearn to work with.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a great point about as far as, you know, communicating with other people, and what I call it is being a connector. When you're talking to somebody, you want to get information out of them, but at the same time, be of service. Be that person that can connect them. If you can't help them, if they're talking to you about something and you're not in a position to be able to help them yourself, or you don't have the knowledge, know who they can talk to. Make that connection, and once you get known to be that person that they can always go to, they'll tend to go to you because they know you're not trying to always make it about you.
Yeah, wonderful point. And to add on to that, after you've left the meeting, after you've met them, always write them a note saying, "Dear Fred, it was wonderful to meet you today. So enjoyed learning about your job at XYZ organization. Hope we can stay in touch." And then look for ways in which you can keep in regular contact. Maybe you see an article in the Los Angeles, an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times that's relevant to them. You can share the link with them, or maybe you've got, you know, you come across somebody else who's working in their field and you want to introduce them to them. Yeah, so look for ways that you can help people, just the point you're making, Alan.
So you start building these relationships, and, you know, hopefully it leads to an interview. And in your opinion, what really makes or breaks the interview?
What makes or breaks the interview is two things. One is, do they like you? Are you a likable person? And the other thing is enthusiasm. They want to see somebody who is enthusiastic. That no one wants to hire somebody who is dull or unenthusiastic or lacks sort of interest in the work. So when you go in the interview, you want to convey to them that you really are interested in the job, interested in the work they do, that you care about it. And this is very, very important. Enthusiasm is critical, and then you want to come across as a person with good people skills, and someone who is who's professional. And by that I mean someone who shows up on time, who's got a great attitude, who enjoys working as a team member, who's good at collaborating, who's diligent, who's prepared to stay late to make a deadline, who's prepared to come in early in order to make the company, the organization, look good, who's ethical and able to take feedback in a constructive way and benefit from it. These are all aspects of being highly professional, and you want to in an interview, you want to come across as having those strengths, because employers want to hire employees who are highly professional, not just people with the right major, with the right grades, with the right technology, but they want people who have people skills, as I've been describing, people who are enjoyable to be around, who are pleasant, who can give and take, who are just good team players.
The most optimistic thing of what I hear you saying is these are actual people skills that can be learned and worked on, and not just something that you read in a book.
They really can, and the more you know, these are like muscles. The more you practice them, the better you become at them. I mean, in other words, you may sometimes wake up in the morning in a grouchy mood and feel grumpy and even angry, but by the time you get dressed and washed up and brushed teeth, combed your hair and left the door, you need to be able to being professional means you switch then into a different mood. You forego any rancor, any vituperation, any virulence, any negative feelings, and you say to yourself, okay, I'm going in, I've got to be professional, I'm going to be pleasant, I'm going to smile, I'm going to be cooperative, I'm going to do my very, very best, I'm going to offer the very best skills I have to my boss. And, you know, you resolve to behave in a high professional way. So that's key, I think.
My late grandma had a license plate that said attitude, and her feeling was attitude is everything in life. And it definitely seems to apply here.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Now, we have a listener question that is coming in. And again, we want to thank those people that take the time to send us in these questions, many of which tell us in their email that they're unable to listen during the day, some of which have said that they're teachers and, you know, they listen later on iTunes or Stitcher. And so, again, we thank you. We appreciate you taking the time to send these in, and we will always do our best to get to them. This one reads, I noticed it says the book is applicable to all ages. What about baby boomers who feel they are now unemployable? How does your book apply to them?
It does apply to them. Yeah, this is very sad when people get to an age and have maybe lost their job, and then they apply, they feel too old, they feel they're as your writer just said, unemployable. This is a tragedy and so sad, because these older workers bring so much to the job market. They're experienced. They are sage, they're wise, they're not hot-headed and immature, they have so much strength and wisdom to bring. So it's so sad when, through bigotry and prejudice, people will not hire them. I think the secret is not to give up, to keep trying, because there is a job out there for you. My book is full of advice on how to do that and how to reach out to people. But it is a tragedy that when you get that sense of, oh my gosh, am I unemployable? It's really dreadful. I've got a whole chapter in my book called "How to Be Super Employable," which your writer of the email will find very helpful. But I'm sympathetic. I'm so sympathetic. It's a tragedy when organizations won't hire baby boomers because they feel they're too old or past it or unemployable. It's just awful.
Well, I was in a meeting yesterday that we were talking about just this subject, and it came around to a story that I had, and that was some years ago. There was a reality show that was being put together based on cases that investigators were working. And it was an NBC show, and they interviewed, you know, just hundreds and hundreds of investigators, and they kept narrowing it down. And I was told that I was in the final 20. And so I came to a meeting, and they interviewed all 20 of us. And I was told that I had been eliminated and that I was not part of the group. And so I just forgot about it. And about 3 weeks later, I ended up getting a call saying, can you please get down here immediately? And so I came down, and they said, we need to bring you into the show, and here's what we're going to do. We've chosen two other people that weren't originally chosen to bring in. And I said, well, what seems to be the problem? And they said, well, we realized that we ended up picking these four or five really beautiful, young, attractive investigators, and they didn't have any experience, and they couldn't actually get the job done, but they looked good on camera, but they weren't getting the job done. So they said, we needed to go back and get, they chose two of us that, you know, at the time were, I think, late 40s, early 50s, and said, you know, we needed to get a couple of you because we realized that we need that mix to actually have a successful show, or in this case, a successful investigation. So I think employers need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's a lovely story. I'm glad. I'm happy for you. It's great.
So now, when you have a student that comes to you or that says, you know, help, you know, I'm embarking on a job search, and I just don't know where to start. What do you tell them? That's really that very first step.
Well, one thing I tell them, Alan, is that they want to. First, I say to them, look, get into your head that failing Don't be afraid of failing, I say to them. Don't be, because a lot of these people are so scared of failing. They've spent their lifetime growing up with parents who rewarded them for everything, even if they did something mediocre, they'd be in sports teams, they'd still get a prize. And so they are so afraid of failing. It's not something they're used to doing, and which is puts them at a big disadvantage. And I say to them, don't be afraid of failing. And I say to them that failure has a stigma it doesn't disturb. I mean, failure, yes, it is unpleasant, but it's an essential part of striving and learning. And failing does not mean you're a failure. Often the reverse. Failing does not mean you're a failure. It means you're trying hard. It means you're taking risks. It means you're getting out of your comfort zone. And I tell people these are all necessary precursors to success. So fail away. And I want to encourage people to fail more. The more they fail, the more likely they will have ultimate success. We learn from our failures. So if someone were to come to me for advice, I'd get them into that mood right away of not being afraid of failure, but in fact welcoming it as a sign that they're making progress and doing the right things. If you want to succeed, you have to fail first, and so welcome. You know, don't look on failing as a negative thing. It's part of the process.
Well, as you were mentioning failure, one of the things that it reminded me, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, is that we've sort of gotten into this time of in school of not keeping score or having pass and fail grades, and it appears as though we're not really focusing on raising leaders. So in your opinion, what traits make an effective leader?
Well, what traits, by the way, I very much agree with your point there, Alan. Thanks for making it. What traits make for great leaders? There's a paradox here. I think one of the great traits of a great leader is someone who listens actively and learns from the people that he or she is responsible for. So a great leader listens carefully. They have a vision which will be contributed to by all the stakeholders around them, and they'll have a vision for where they're going. But the old idea of a leader as kind of a military, hard-headed, bull in a china shop type of person, that is no longer valid. You know, that metaphor, that image is all wrong. You know, leaders aren't like that anymore. Leaders tend to be gentle. They're tough, but they tend to listen carefully and develop a vision for the future and help their people, the people who work for them, help them excel and do their best. So the best leaders are the ones who help the people underneath them be leaders. This is the secret of leadership, is to help people under you blossom, and that requires empathy. It requires listening. It requires sensitivity, and it requires compassion, and it requires generosity. And those are all things that great leaders have in abundance.
And Chris, you know, it seems like a lot of that comes from parenting, and I know our time is coming to an end slowly here, but I would love just a small tease on some of the points of this next book, because I'm very excited about it.
My next book is as I mentioned before, Alan, is what fathers can do to help their daughters thrive, because I have three grown daughters who are highly successful, and so the book is on what fathers do to help their daughters thrive in school. Although most of the points apply to raising boys as well. And I think that there are several keys here. One of them is, as a father, you want to catch your kids doing something right. So in our families, we used to have a weekly son family meeting, and one of the items on the agenda would always be encouragement, where we'd get each family member will go to the room offering encouragement to everybody else. And that doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be something small, like I might say to one of my daughters, Christina, I noticed yesterday how you held the door open for Mummy as she was going through to let her go through the laundry. That's very thoughtful. Thank you. So it's trivial, minor, but it's these little gritty things that make all the difference in a family. So catching them do something right. Another thing I would say is I would encourage the whole family to write New Year's resolutions or goals for the year and share them with each other, because the more you know about what your family members want to achieve with their lives, the more you can help them do it and vice versa. Another thing I would recommend is have lots of family rituals that mean a lot. You know, to turn the television set off and have family have at least once a day have a family meal together. That's what I sort of mean by a ritual, sort of a habit, a good habit where you talk about things. Do not allow the kids to bring their iPhones to the table. Get rid of the screens and talk to each other about the day. So these are some of the things you can do. There are lots, you know, obviously lots more. The books are going to be full of other ideas. But those are some of the things.
Well, Chris, first of all, I just want to thank you for coming on, and I want to share with you, and this is Alan, having Matt on the show, one of the reasons why I wanted to have him on the show is because we have such great synergy, and I'm feeling that same synergy with you, so I feel like we're all part of the same club, and for anybody out there, if you want to get more information in regards to Chris, again, you can go to chrispalmeronline.com, and Chris, one story, if anybody wants to pull it up, I'm on the cover of a book that was written by the Kamehameha Schools in Hawaii, and the book is called Catch Them Doing Something Good.
So
that was part of the philosophy that we had. We took it into schools and started at the kindergarten level so that we would focus on catch them doing something good. If Betty and Kathy are the first ones to sit down when the teacher says everybody sit down and cross your legs, focus on those. Don't focus on Susie and Billy that are in the back still playing. Right. Don't focus on them. Focus on the ones that you can catch doing something good. So when you brought that up, again, this is audio and not video. I had a huge smile. I looked across at Matt. He had a huge smile. So we thought, okay, this is somebody that is part of the group. So we appreciate much.
Thank you. I'm proud to be part of your group, Matt and Alan. And it's been wonderful to be on with you. And by the way, my email is Palmer, just my last name, P-A-L-M-E-R, Palmer at American.edu, American with an N, Palmer at American.edu. If anybody wants to write to me to get a copy of my personal mission statement or any other way I can help them, I'm happy to respond. And on that website you mentioned, chrispalmeronline.com, there are lots of freebies, lots of things, handouts that people will enjoy and benefit from.
Well, again, thank you, and please be with us as soon as the next book is out. I look forward to having you back on, and for everybody out there, please tune in next week when our guest will be Donald Altman, author of Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness, Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. Everybody, be good human beings, and be with us again next week for Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.